There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Another hour of live local talk. And, of course, the phone and text line open for you at 343-0106, 343-0106. Kevin Spriggs and Dr. Lou in studio. Welcome, gentlemen.
Well, good Thanks. Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Nice to be here.
What do you think? It's like, do either of y'all know what your BMI is? Body mass index. You know the number?
I don't know the number, but okay. I know that, you know, that my numbers are right at the edge of where you're not supposed to be.
Mine may be way over that, but I'm still looking at this state health order here that says I get when they list the comorbidities like COPD and kidney disease and sickle cell and organ transplant, all that stuff. I get that, and somebody can, they have documentation to show that somebody's fighting cancer. I mean, absolutely. But then they throw in smoking and, I'll put it the way they don't put, being fat. But not just being fat, BMI of 30 or greater. Yeah. I got to lose. I don't know what the BMI is. I don't know the number. Am I 29? Am I 30? Am I 560? I don't know. It seems like a very arbitrary thing to throw in there.
Well, I think we're at the point now that the vaccine distribution is getting so much push. It's time to make it simple.
Yeah.
You know, just take away all this, fill out the ABC form, just go to this website, sign up.
Get your appointment,
I think that's where we are, and I think that's maybe where the president was last night with it, too.
Yep. Well, we'll see, but here in Alabama, you got to figure out, you got to take the caliper and figure out what your BMI is, and if you're and smoking, too. So if you want the vaccine and you can't get it, pick up a smoking habit, and then you can get the vaccine. Mm-hmm. All right, I know that's not what y'all came in to talk about, but no. I just wanted to get your opinion on it. What is it that we're talking about? I mean, Common Core is, wait a second, I thought this was something we dealt with years ago.
Oh, we've been dealing with it for years. That's right? The problem, okay?
People would think, well, we hadn't heard much talk about it. It must be gone.
Yeah, I wish it was gone. But of course, the governor told us that Common Core math was eradicated in 2019. You mm-hmm. remember that. So the fact of the matter is, it never was eradicated. Eagle Form and other people had done a comparative analysis, K through 12. It stayed right there. All they did was to change a few words here and there. They plagiarized things, I would argue. But the bottom line is Common Core math never went away. No, neither did anything from the ELA and social studies. So our basic argument for the last 10 years is that this thing never should have been here mm-hmm. to begin with. This is all part of Obama, fundamental changing of America. And it's working because all these little AOCs that you see running out there in Antifa, BLM, protesting, rioting, all of that, that's part and parcel of the indoctrination that has been part and parcel of what Common Core is all about, in my view. Okay.
Wait a second. The squad, those opinions are there because of Common Core?
Let's put it this way. That younger generation, of which she is one, I would say was exposed to the Common Core approach, number one. But if she's too old for that, she got a dose of it in college, okay. which is another source for all of the problems we have in terms of the radicalization of the younger generation.
So this the manifestation, you're saying, we're seeing the political manifestation of Common Core in the education system.
Oh, definitely. I mean, and I think that you can't go through the classic example for me is the 1619 Project. Mm-hmm. I mean, that takes you down a road that basically says the American Revolution was all about keeping slavery. In 1688, the Quakers first came together in the Germantown meeting and said, if you want to be a Quaker, you can't own slaves. They got rid of it by 1754. That's the origination of abolitionist movement in the United States. How does that not get factored into someone? Plus, by 1780, three states through the colonies mm-hmm. that had signed the Declaration had already gotten rid of slavery. So I'm sorry, you know, Sean. I just don't buy this anti-American, you know, we're racist, homophobic, imperialistic, whatever other thing that they can think of today in the cancel culture that takes you into a completely different interpretation. This business of critical race theory, which basically says the reforms of the 1960s, the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, that doesn't make any difference because we're all racist. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. So in 2000, and I've said this on my radio show and I've said it to other people, 1970, 250,000 interracial marriages. Today, over 5 million, okay? Does that mean anything? What about the political revolution that took place because of the 1960 reforms? Does it mean anything that we had, you know, a president who was black? And just go down from federal level to state level to local level. The blacks have been able to come through and do exactly what Dr. King expected to happen, an integrated society that worked based on merit and hard work. Now, if you're going to argue that all of us are racist simply on the basis of skin color and there's no chance that there's any possibility that we can be anything other than that, how do you explain the political and social revolutions that took place within the last 50 years? I just don't get that. I reject it fundamentally.
So you're saying that in Common Core, part of this is not teaching those things that you just went
yes,
through.
And exactly. It's left out. Civics has been completely left out. The social studies part of it.
Well, I agree. I mean, civics left out. You could listen to any kind of person on the street responding to questions about civics. And
right.
They don't, right. I
know.
Agree with that.
But
yeah.
The history part of it, too, is part and parcel of this anti-American argument. Now, listen, there's nothing new about this. I would argue that in foreign policy, you started to see this in the anti-American part of it creeping in the late 1950s, okay? You saw questions about the degree to which capitalism really drove American foreign policy, and those kinds of things, you know, promoted anti-democratic approaches. Now, why is that? Well, guess what? We're in the middle of the Cold War, and in my view, I think it was better to have somebody like Chiang Kai-shek, who may have been an SOB, but he was our SOB, mm-hmm. rather than the kinds of things that you see where, you know, you've got tin pot dictators all over the place and they are now threats, like Kim Jong-un, like, you know, Xi in China. These kinds of people, I would argue, within the Cold War framework, made it mandatory for us to find people who were maybe not as, you know, pure white in terms of their democratic theoretical approaches, but at least they weren't as bad as the communists.
Lesser of two evils.
To a degree, yes. But here again, Gene Kirkpatrick really had a good article about this, I think maybe 1979. And the argument was authoritarian governments have a way of reforming, whereas the totalitarians, the communists, don't. Now, to a certain degree, you could argue that the Soviet, you know, falling is an indication that maybe you can have popular revolt against a dictatorship like that. But when you look at it from the standpoint of what you see in China today, does anyone really think that Xi is going to be overthrown by some sort of a popular revolt? I don't think so. So that takes us back to this whole question, though, about American foreign policy, which the left, particularly since Vietnam, has hammered us on. And again, we get back to this question about, well, what's the nature of our foreign policy? Is it only about finding markets for business, or is there something else to it? And I would argue that there is something else to it. It kind of got mixed up with Trump's, you know, his soft isolationism, mm-hmm. I think. But to a certain degree, we've always been that beacon of hope where it's the U.S. again. We're the good guys and they're the bad guys.
And this is not being taught, you're saying, with Common Core.
Let's put it this way. No, it's not being taught with Common Core, okay? And in the colleges, it's been even worse. And now, given the fact that conservatives like me have a very hard time of finding a place in college, I think that's another major obstacle to having a really coherent approach to American education within the framework of what you and, well, I know I'm older than you, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm older than him too. But I had professors who were liberal, but they were not ideologically liberal saying you have to learn this if you want to get an A. I could say whatever I want, you know, if I could justify it.
Mm-hmm.
These people were educators, you know, and I'll never forget this. I had this professor in my history class. His name was Henry Command. And Henry said, Louis, you're just going to have to realize you're going to have to pay people to do nothing. Now, here he comes out of the Depression, okay, World War II, the Depression.
Right, right.
That was his mindset. You had to pay people to do nothing. And I couldn't answer him then. I didn't know anything. But that's exactly what we're doing today. Part of what LBJ created with the Great Society program.
Well, let's do this. Actually, we'll run to the break here and come back because I want to talk about what's happening here at a state level and the State Board of Education and Common Core.
Okay.
From the Common Sense Campaign, Dr. Lou and Kevin in the studio. We'll be right back.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. I know you're probably not ready to do the 1-800-GOT-JUNK thing here on a Friday, but maybe you make an appointment for early next week. The junk you've been looking at your house, your business, the storage unit you pay on every month. What do you got in there? You don't even know, right? If I quiz you, you don't know. And you're paying on it every month. Get rid of the junk and use my buddy Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And he realizes you've got a life. So this idea that, we'll be there sometime between 8 in the morning Monday and 9 o'clock at night Friday, They find a day that works for you, a window of time that works for you. They do this thing where they make an appointment. How about that? And they show up on time. They quote you a price. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. So you got junk. You want the junk gone. Get 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or just pick up the phone and call them at 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right. Continue our conversation with Kevin and Dr. Lou from the Common Sense Campaign. So what's going on here? Because we've got about 8 minutes here with Common Core and State Board of Education. Walk us through this.
Okay. Very quickly, the State Board of Education has been... We have four votes to get rid of Common Core. We need a fifth vote. We've been trying to lobby the governor to do this. And the bottom line at this point is that Joe Bonner and Terry Lathan, who is the former head of the ALGOP, they've been in conversations. Terry Lathan had our team members on there, Robin Leidecker and Kathy Miller. They've all met. The next step now is to have a meeting with the governor eventually. They had a meeting yesterday. They basically have said, we want to wait until the session is over. We have to kind of think about this because that, to me, is rope-a-dope in a way. I think that it makes more sense for us to see the governor and make – they can do two things at once in our view. But at this point here, you have – that possibility that if the governor becomes the fifth vote, mm-hmm. the argument then becomes we will get rid of Common Core math first, and then we'll go off after the rest of it. Unless the governor decides that it's in her political interest, which it should be, if she wants to run, she has a long history of problems, the toll, mm-hmm. Amendment 1. She needs to clean that up. She can clean it up and help herself by getting rid of Common Core, just decapitate it right away. The second thing that's going on is that within the legislature, you have HB 440. It's a bill that's sponsored by Bob Fincher, and we're hoping that for once, now we've had three different bills up there. Every time it comes up, it dies in the Education Committee in the House because of Terry Collins, who has taken lots of money from the Progress PAC, which is your BCA component. So right now we have a two-track approach to this. We think that we will be successful on one of them. And I'll leave it at that, and I'll come back and tell you what we're actually going to do. But it's tricky business because the institutional inertia to change is a major problem.
Yeah,
after 10 years of it, despite the fact that it is collapsed, we are at 58 in math and 48 in ELA,
and I think
it's unacceptable.
That is the best precursor to any discussion here of changes to happen, because I've had it. I've had it with failing as a state and hearing those stats.
Exactly. And it's so counter to everything Ivy wants to do with business development. Who wants to bring a business to a state?
So why are business interests want to keep it?
Let's put it this way, Sean. It is inexplicable to us at this point, given what's happened. The BCA has been the main proponent of Common Core since the beginning. They have donated money to Hubbard and Marsh to make sure that the campaign coffers were taken care of, and that meant that everybody who needed money would have to go to Hubbard, go to Marsh, get their money. Okay, that's how it's been controlled. The only argument I can make right now is that the dynamic is different, and I think that the overwhelming evidence of the failure of Common Core may propel us into a different situation. We'll see, okay? That's all I can say.
Okay, if you get to this point, Kevin, I mean, if it's not Common Core, when do you need to, okay, this is more of like a pragmatic question. If you do get rid of Common Core math, when do you have to do it by that they say they can get it done by the next school year? Because I can imagine they say, well, we're going to do it, but we can't get that hit.
The bottom line is we're just going to go right back to the 2009 standards. And here our argument is from 2003 to 2009, we were making progress. By 2009, we were at 25th in the various rankings, okay? Our standards were rated excellent by the Fordham Institute. The bottom line is we can just transition to 2009 standards and go right back to it without any real problem. The argument here is the governor asked Superintendent Mackey to take a look at Minnesota. If you remember what happened in March of 2019, she shut down the course of study and basically said, I want something different. So she said, I want to see Minnesota, I want to see some of the other best states, and I want to look at something other than Common Core. They did not do that, okay? We've talked to the various SBOE members. Dr. McCarty was the last one we talked to. She said, I'm still waiting to see those changes. Well, Kathy Miller, our math expert, talked to Minnesota. They're using their own 2007 standards. So this idea that we can't go back and improve is absurd. Okay.
All right.
Where do standards come from? I mean, why can't we select a set of standards that don't necessarily conform to some globalist agenda?
Right, exactly.
Or, you know, that are more based on our local values.
Well, I mean, I think what people want to see, and we just got about 90 seconds here, is results, right? I mean, as parents want to see results.
Right.
Alabamians, not just parents. I mean, Alabamians want to see the scores come up. We want the children educated.
But see, here's the whole problem. Common Core was never tested, never piloted. It was an ideological set of standards that James Milgram, who took us to the moon with his math, and California had the best standards, said absolutely no. He even said about the 2019 standards, no, throw them in the garbage. They're not good. Sandra Stotsky, another English major, super person, she said no to the ELA standards because they weren't good. So, I mean, we're left with this kind of, you know, devastation after 10 years of an experiment. Well, we've had the test program. It hasn't worked. So why in the world, if Kevin is a business guy, if he sees something's not working, he's not going to have a conference with us.
10 years.
Out of here, you know?
I'm going to be gone by 10 years if it doesn't work in my business.
That's for sure. All right, people want to get more information on this, find y'all online.
CommonSenseCampaign.org. We've got plenty of information on it, and that's the best way to do it, I think.
All right, keep us in the loop. Update us as we get more on this.
All right,
Dr. Luke, Kevin, thank you for your time. Mm-hmm. All right, coming right back here on Midday Mobile. Reminder, too. Remember, streaming online, fmtalk1065.com. Tune in radio app. You can get us there. Also, remember, podcast aplenty waiting for you. 54 hours a week of live local programming for you. Coming from this very studio, go check it out. fmtalk1065.com podcast, or just make sure you subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify. They're on all those platforms. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday. I check in with my buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And we've been talking about precious metal prices and the movement back and forth. I want to talk about buying stuff from y'all, but the flip side of it is you've talked in the past about buying, that y'all are always looking. Are you still buying precious metal?
Oh, yes, sir. We're always buying gold and silver. So whether you're talking about, you know, some scrap jewelry, an unwanted class ring, some sterling silver flatware, we're always buying those types of items. But right now, even with the prices fluctuating as much as they are, we are actively and aggressively looking for gold and silver bullion. And there are many items out there. You know, people talk about, you know, your spot prices here and everybody's going to pay less than that to get it. That's not necessarily true. There are items that I'm paying over spot to get right now. So somebody has some gold and silver bullion they want to cash out on, they need to let us get, you know, give us that opportunity to quote on it, let them know what we're paying on those items, and work out a plan to maximize their return.
All right. And what about that? I mean, the gold and silver prices, are they, you had taught us in the past, this ratio between the two, are they, is that closing or is that still different? I mean, where's that sitting?
It closed up a little bit, and now it's starting to spread apart again. The strange thing is, though, if you look at the price to own physical gold and silver, you know, to have it in your hands, walk out the door with it, those prices, the numbers are tightening up and tightening up because the electronic market is being played to the nth degree. The physical market is still very scarce. There's a scarcity out there on gold and silver. You know, we used to plan a couple days ahead on ordering our silver. Now we're planning a couple of months ahead. So I've got plenty in stock. We're watching those ratios between gold and silver and those prices. But I'd love to keep my money local. If I can buy a bunch of silver from folks here in town, I'd rather do that than, you know, send it out of town.
Well said. All right. People want to come in and check out all the gift items as well, let alone talking precious metals, and maybe they got some to sell. How do they find you?
Yeah, we're in Midtown at 2204 Government Street. You can always call 725-1590 or check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com.
Thanks, Angelo.
Have a good weekend, Sean.
You too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. All right. Saw this note just came up too. Alabama Governor Kay Ivey issued directive for flags in the state to be flown at half staff tomorrow in honor of the more than 10,000 Alabamians who have died from COVID-19. So Saturday, March 13th, also marks 1 year since Alabama's first confirmed case of coronavirus was identified. I thought that was Monday, that we were 52 weeks at Monday, but who am I? That's the governor's office. That's what they're saying. All right. So Saturday, March 13th also marks 1 year since Alabama's first confirmed case of coronavirus identified. Quote here from the governor said, on the 1 year anniversary of the first confirmed COVID-19 case in Alabama, I find it most appropriate that our state pauses to pay our respects to the thousands of lives lost to this horrible virus. Over the course of the last year, Alabama, along with the rest of the nation and the world, has been tested in ways we could have never imagined. And that was end quote. All right. So according to Bama Tracker, which is a website, which is really good, that person, Bama Tracker, does, I can tell you, they do the best job in the state. It's not a state agency. This guy, I think he actually received some awards for it. BamaTracker.com, or you can go to Bama Tracker on Twitter is where I follow him, said the state's current death toll is at 10,274 from COVID. Governor's order, and the story from Yellowhammer says, governor's ordering of flags at half staff comes hours after the ADPH announced eligibility for the coronavirus vaccine will expand to more than 2 million additional individuals beginning March 22nd. That's what we were talking about earlier in the show, that they've expanded it to people that are fat and spoke. Okay, well, that's not all of it, but if you didn't catch it earlier in the show, so ADPH came out and said, okay, starting on the 22nd, everybody 55 and older, so it moves now from 65, right now it's 55 as of March 22nd, not before then. As of March 22nd, every citizen over age 55 will be eligible for a vaccine in Alabama, and then they provided a list of medical conditions and some professions or jobs that get special eligibility. So if you're under 55 and you work in transportation and logistics, I love how these are so open. I can make a case. Yeah, I'm in transportation and logistics, waste and wastewater, food service, including restaurant staff, shelter and housing, which would be construction, finance, so if you're a bank teller, information technology and communications,
Okay, so that energy, legal. Although the legal thing is that the legal folks have been getting their vaccines for a month now. It's a whole other story. Media, even though I know media folks that have already gotten their vaccine, but media folks now move, and media folks under 65 who have gotten their vaccine. But media now, as of the 22nd, will be in. Public safety and engineers will be in on that as well. The other part of this that really caught my attention, I've talked about several times, was ADPH provided a list of medical conditions that will make an individual eligible for the vaccine. Okay, so this is that comorbidities we've talked about before. And to be honest with you, everything except two here I think is spot on. It says people with intellectual or developmental disabilities, yes, you want them getting the vaccine. Cancer, want them getting the vaccine. Chronic kidney disease, yes. COPD, yes. Heart conditions, yes. Solid organ transplant, yes. Sickle cell disease, yes. Pregnancy, yes, which is not a comorbidity, but it's a, what'd you call it? Type 1 and type 2 diabetes. Yes, okay, those all seem to make sense. But the two that stuck out to me, I know they have to try to address this somehow, but they said obesity, because it is a comorbidity, but it says obesity, BMI greater than 30. So there's going to be people having to figure out what their BMI is. I think it's questionable. And then on top of that, you have smoking on there as a comorbidity. Now, who's not going to walk up there and say that they smoke all the time? They go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, big smoker. Well, sir, you don't smell like smoke. You don't look at, I'm the biggest smoker you've ever seen. I'm smoking all the time. I mean, it would just be easier, I think, to open it up to everybody. I think maybe, I don't know. We'll look at the supply by next week, but it seems like what we're hearing, we'll see, how we're going to be at a point where I think everybody who wants the vaccine, not people that fall inside, and I think that's a metric they got to look at, not just people who fall inside the age group, but out of that age group, like everybody who's 65 up that has been able to get the vaccine has not. They have the numbers. Here's how many people that are in that age group. Here's how many people got the vaccine. So I wonder if you could roll that into saying, sure, we're going to open it up to, you know, I think you don't want kids getting the vaccine, but let's say 20 years old or older or something like that getting the vaccine, all right? Well, you say, well, there's too many of those people. Well, that's if all of them turned out to get the vaccine. If it's, you know, if we go, okay, the average has been 30% of the people in any kind of age cell, then don't you have to back that out and say, well, that's actually not this number, but is this number, you know, less? I don't know. We'll see what happens next week, but the obesity and the smoking thing, I think we'll get a lot of discussion. All right. Reminder, too, that coming up, tomorrow morning, that's the show. Mike Ward and I with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Tomorrow, Director of Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries for the state of Alabama, Chuck Sykes, is our guest. A lot to talk about with him, looking back on his presentation last weekend to the Conservation Advisory Board meeting about, it's like the state of the state when it comes to critters. He will join us tomorrow to talk about that at 7. So that's 7 tomorrow morning with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. So check us out there. All right. Go to the news and come right back. More of the show. And we wrap it up here on a Friday.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, welcome back to Midday Mobile, and joined by another part of the team, another part of the family at Taylor Martino, and somebody that I haven't gotten a chance to meet till today, Amanda Summerlin, joining me. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Sean, for having me.
Hey, it's good to get you in here. I've, you know, gotten to know a lot of your coworkers, pretty much all the coworkers at Taylor Martino and the family there, so it's good to meet you as well. We're talking before we went on the air, and you mentioned mass torts being your specialty. I'm going to just plead ignorance on this. What is a mass tort?
Sure, Sean. So a mass tort is different than a class action. Okay. So with a mass tort, each individual claim will be filed and evaluated, but we share the same judge and the same venue because we've got common issues. So we all want the benefits of knowing the corporate history of the defendants that we're suing. And also we want to have the science and share that and keep our issues, although they are specific as far as the individual. But we want to have the benefit of keeping the litigation issues that are similar in the same place. So we have a mass tort action going on here, several of them with our clients in Mobile.
Yeah, I want to talk about this. Your work as an attorney, kind of educate us. We'll go back for a second because you said mass torts are different than class action. So class action is a term that we hear. People just use that term. Oh, it's a class action suit. The difference you said, what does class action do? And then you kind of laid out what mass tort is. So educate us.
Sure. So with a class action, it's really where a group of people all go in together on one claim at the same time. And so when you have resolution with class action, you divide it out, whatever the settlement is.
We've all gotten that check for $5.17 from something in our car or something like that.
That's right. That's right, Sean. That's exactly what it is. And so this is different because everybody's exposure is different. Everybody's experience is different. And also, of course, medical history. So we have a benefit there in that we evaluate each claim, but we also can share some of the knowledge of the science and corporation.
Thank you for the education so we can know the difference between them. So in this mass tort, and this is one that maybe people have heard discussed before, this is, if I get it right, hernia mesh?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. First of all, what's hernia mesh?
So hernia mesh is it is actually a piece of mesh manufactured that is used to put over a hernia in an effort to repair that hernia.
Like a patch of sorts or something.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. It can be square. It can be oval. Some of them look like a badminton, like a little net piece. So there's different manufacturers involved in mesh.
So there's not just they're the hernia mesh company. There's more than one that makes it.
That's right. There's about four main manufacturers. There's two or three others there that we also look at, and each of those big companies also makes their own specific products. So it's a pretty detailed process when you look at the different meshes out there on the market.
So it sounds like this is, I want to talk about numbers, affects a lot of people. You've got four companies making this stuff that's inside a lot of people. What's gone wrong with this? What is the problem here with this mesh?
So for mesh, there are some of them that are made of polypropylene. And for that, it's not something that is always accepted in the human body. But some of the meshes will migrate, they'll deteriorate, they'll attach to organs. They'll also cause obstructions, chronic pain. But the problem with the mesh is that some of these materials that are part of it are not to be used in the human body.
The polypropylene, like Long John's stuff, that stuff is similar. So that's, they make the patch out of that. Now I'm picturing this. So it goes inside the person, they sew them up, and then these things happen that you're talking about.
That's right. That's right.
And so how long have they been doing this? Is this a recent occurrence? Has this been going on for a long time that they use these patches?
Yeah, it's actually been going on for a number of years. I know at least back to the 80s. Some back then, you know, were made of different materials than now. But there's just certain ones really that we focused on that we've developed through working with our experts and research that we've linked up to these issues that people have been having, and that it's a harmful product that shouldn't be used.
If you're just joining us, talking to a mass tort specialist and educator on this, what a mass tort is, Amanda Summerlin from Taylor Martino, about this mesh. You talked about the different things happening. You said the pain. Okay, I get that one. You said migration?
That's right.
Like moving from where it's supposed to be?
That's right. So if you were going to have a mesh placement near your umbilical area, mm-hmm. then it could actually detach from that area and migrate to another part in the body. And this is something that's a fault of the manufacturer. Another thing that we've seen is it could just disintegrate within the body. So you go to the doctor to have this patch placed, and it's there, but the mesh fails because of what it's made out of, and disintegrates within the body. So then you no longer
go.
Yeah. we don't always know the answer to that.
Wow.
Yeah, and so another thing that it can do is attach to organs in your body. So there again, that patch there that was protecting your tissue with that organ has then
moved on and found a new home.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Another thing that can happen that's one of the more common too is infection. Some people, their bodies just reject the mesh totally as a foreign object. It can cause infections, wounds that won't heal. Also, if the mesh fails, it can be a recurrence in your hernia. And so that would be another surgery to go through.
Numbers of surgeries. Give us just some ballpark stuff. How many
many of these surgeries are they doing? How many? You said since the 80s.
Yeah. So the products that we're looking at are more current than that.
Okay.
Really, really more like 2004.
Okay.
Current.
Okay. That's 16 years, man. That's a bunch of time. A lot of people, a lot of surgeries.
That's right. So it's around in America, there's roughly 1 million hernia surgeries a year.
Wow.
So some of these products have been recalled. Some have just been taken off the market. Others are still being used today. But there again, you can still have these symptoms and problems. Just because it hasn't been recalled doesn't mean it might not be an issue.
That's a good point. So this one you would know if you had this surgery, since 2004 to now. And if they're obviously feeling any of these issues you talked about, but even if not, it's worth contacting.
Yes, definitely. So we take a look at the records, the original surgery date, and then anything that's happened after that. So sometimes individuals will go in for what's called a revision, where they may reattach mesh that's been detached. You know, we talked about that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Or they may put another piece of mesh over that piece, leave it in. Another surgery would be a removal where, it's decided that the mesh just, doesn't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not functioning. Sometimes it's completely removed and physicians may use a biologic mesh, which is, a different product. But sometimes when it's removed, they'll also put in a replacement mesh, just depending on the individual.
So this, for a lot of people, different versions of this, but it's worth having you look at those records. Y'all can do that and tell us what happened.
Yes, definitely. So the first thing that I do is, get a copy of the records and see what manufacturers at issue. And so once we know what kind of mesh is there, I'm very familiar with the issues and symptoms that those particular meshes present, because
right.
Each of them are unique. So we evaluate the claim based on the mesh that was implanted, and then we can also go through the medical history to see what was removed or revised later on and track it from there.
All right. The time is of the essence here?
Yes. There have not been any trials yet in this hernia mesh litigation anywhere here in the country, but we are getting ready. Our first trial group is starting up middle of January of 2021. So anybody that's having some issues, take a look and see if it's a claim we can move forward on.
All right. So somebody would just call Taylor Martino and say, I have the mesh, or they ask for you specifically, Amanda, or what do they do?
Sure, really, either one of those, Sean. They can call and say they're calling about a potential hernia mesh case. They'll be transferred to me. They can call and ask for me. And at that point, I would just find out from them where they had their surgeries, and there's no cost for us to request the records and take a look and
Good
then
deal.
See where we can go from there.
All right. Well, Amanda Summerlin, that's who you're going to talk to. I got the education about mesh and mass torts, and you can get her on your side, like all the attorneys at Taylor Martino. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Sean.
You can reach Taylor Martino Law Firm online, taylormartino.com. No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.